This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 93-year-old George Poplin of Clovis, California, originally from the small town of Meeker, Oklahoma. He spent all of 45 days in combat on a machine gun crew with Company H of the 9th Infantry Regiment, part of the 2nd Infantry Division in World War II. A German mortar shell cut short his time on the front lines and nearly claimed his life. But I want to get a little more about the time leading up to your injuries. You got there during the Battle of the Bulge and what they said was the most treacherous winter Europe had experienced in decades. I just can't imagine that winters in Oklahoma prepared you to face what you were dealing with there during the Bulge. So how'd you handle all of that?
Well, we had to thaw our machine guns out.
How'd you do that?
Now, that's just a saying. But they were water cooled. You had the gun part, and you had the base, then you had the ammunition.
And you mentioned that you're part of this heavy weapons platoon, so you guys have the 81-millimeter mortars, you have these machine guns, and then there's different guys with different duties within that. Did you have to know everybody's job, or did you have one job that you did every day?
You just did one job.
And what was yours?
Carrying ammunition, mostly, till I moved up to number two for a short time.
And just this idea of being a replacement, did that bother you at all, the thought that the reason they need replacements is guys are getting hit, guys are getting killed and injured?
Didn't think about it.
You never thought about the possibility that you might be hurt?
Well, when on Christmas Eve, I went to the chaplain's service, and I promised the Lord that if I got home, I'd serve him the rest of my life. That took a while for that to catch on, but I finally caught on after I got home.
But it sounds like you meant it when you said that, when you made that deal with God.
I did. Bless me, I did.
Is that to assume that you felt that wasn't exactly what you'd been doing before that? That this was going to be something new for you?
Yeah.
And when you're that far, when you're on the other side of the world, and you know you're going to be in harm's way, you know, and it's Christmas, a time that you're used to spending with your family, what goes through your mind when you're instead with a bunch
pretty
of...
Pretty sad.
Yeah? You think about home?
Oh, yeah.
Wonder what they're
and
eating there?
And from the time I left till I got back to the States, I didn't hear a word from home.
Not your father?
Not a letter caught up with me.
Wow. Even in the hospital, huh?
Mm-mm.
Wow. That must have made mail call hard when everybody else is getting it.
Oh, it was. When I got back to the States, the first thing I did was make a phone call to my wife.
Did she answer?
Yeah. See, we came into New York and shipped out to Texas.
I know we're bouncing around here. I'm just trying to make sure I don't miss anything along the way. What was your first taste of combat? I mean, you mentioned being in that castle on Christmas Eve. How soon after that did you start to get a feel for this?
This was the time that Patton had prayed for clear weather.
Uh-huh.
And we had 3 days of clear weather. And there were planes going over us and coming back all day long and all night.
The context there is that until that point, the weather's so bad, you guys are fighting on the ground, but the planes can't support you.
Planes couldn't go.
And can you give us a feel for what those combat conditions were? What you guys were up against? What, you know, from moment to moment, the kinds of things you were doing and what you had to watch out for?
Well, we had to be careful of light at night. One day, we were marching with Patton's tanks.
Uh-huh.
And they stopped to rest, and we pulled over and stopped to rest. We were walking. And I looked down at my foot, and here was a wire going over my foot.
One more step, huh?
And we eased out of there and got out of that place.
So you almost set off a booby trap or something?
Almost set off a booby trap.
Wow. And I imagine that as these days are going by, you're probably seeing a lot of things that you haven't seen before.
You might say that.
Can you give us a feel for that? The things that you were having to process and digest and make yourself aware of?
Well, it was just the way we had to eat and the way we had to walk. All we did was walk.
Did you have a lot of snow to walk through?
There was some snow.
Did you have to sleep in the snow?
Well, one night we were out on a kind of a rocky place. Every time we put a pick in the ground was frozen. Mm-hmm. So if you tried to pick, it sounded, made a big sound. Then here would come some artillery shells.
We're right over here. Fire away.
I laid down there about 3 o'clock in the morning, I guess, and I would have been asleep in a minute. And the sergeant come over and kicked me to get me up, because once you go to sleep, you'd be gone.
Because of how cold it was, or because of the
freeze?
Wow. And a lot of guys who were fighting in those conditions at that time suffered frozen feet?
Yeah, I did some of that. Not bad, but I did get some freeze.
On your toes?
Yeah.
The weather was certainly a hazard. And the way you just said it, I mean, that's certainly imposing. Don't fall asleep. You might not wake up. What were some of the other hazards that you had to watch out for? What are the different ways that you might not come home from the war?
Well, if you get in the way of a bullet, we had that 30 caliber, and we had the mortar, so we were equipped. And I guess the gunners carried pistols, and everybody else carried a rifle.
Do you remember the first time you got shot at?
We were on that hill I was telling you about. Mortar shells were coming over. They weren't shooting just at me.
But the fact that you were with that unit and that you're around this machine gun, that makes you a prime target.
Very much so.
You're the guys they want to take out. Did that register at the time? Were you aware of that?
You know, you're so busy at other things, you don't seem to bother you until you're through it.
In that time, from when you entered combat to when you got wounded, were there some other close calls that you came through where they almost got you?
Just the one out on the hill where we were at one night. It's probably about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh. And what happened?
Well, those shells started coming at us. And if we'd struck the ground, which was frozen.
So did you have to go somewhere else? Or did you just hunker down?
Well, we just had to sit there and not dig.
And hope it didn't hit you.
Yeah.
How about dealing with guys around you being killed or wounded? How'd you handle that?
Well, we went into a town that had dead GIs stacked up like cordwood, 3 or 4 deep, maybe that high. Some of the characters were cutting rings off of dead guys' hands. My buddy, he didn't have the warm boots that we had, and I offered to take a pair off of somebody. He wouldn't wear them.
When you saw the dead Americans, you were going to get a pair of their boots and try to help save his feet.
Yeah.
What does that do to you when you're a 20-year-old kid and you see dozens of guys just like you are gone?
They were just laying there like stacked up like cordwood, about 3 foot tall, dozens and dozens of them.
Does that make you angry? Does it make you scared?
Sick.
And isn't there a point where it has to enter your mind? Maybe I'm next?
That's pretty much on your mind all the time.
How did you handle that? How did you keep going when that's confronting you constantly?
Kept reading my Bible and praying.
Were there times where you had to deal with losing someone you had gotten to know?
See, the outfit I was in, we were replacements, so I didn't know any of them really well. Now, when we were basic, you know, you knew the guys you were with all the time.
Sure.
But when you go up as a replacement, you're the new guy. They're comfortable, so it doesn't get very close.
Maybe it's better that way.
I guess so. Well, you're just always worried about getting hit. Of course, they were running, and we were chasing. If it had been the other way around, it'd have been worse. But they would have left booby traps, too.
Was that a frequent thing to encounter, a booby trap? Or?
Well, that's the only one I ever encountered.
Did you see some that had already gone off, or guys that had been victimized by
them? Well, heard of some. If that one had gone off, there'd have been about a half a dozen of us dead.
Wow. And you were inches away from triggering it.
I had my foot under the wire.
Your foot was touching the wire?
Under it.
Like, what, an inch or so?
Yeah. Wow. If I'd have moved my foot forward any, I would have tripped it off.
Wow. What kind of conditions did you have to sleep in? Did you have anything to keep you warm? Were you in a foxhole? Did you have a tent?
Usually we had a foxhole or some kind of cover.
Unless it was too frozen to dig in?
When I first got there, I was fixing a foxhole, and this guy come up and helped me. And I said, "Where do you guys get your socks?" "We get them the same place you do." He was the officer. No signals on him, though.
He didn't have the markings on his uniform?
They didn't wear them.
Because they didn't want to be targeted?
Yeah. Yep.
Did you find anything that would help you stay warm in those conditions? Extra clothing?
Well, when I got hit, I had on 2 overcoats and heavy gloves.
That was your standard?
It was that day. It's cold. I'd been on guard duty, and it was extra cold. And that shrapnel went right through there, half an inch layer, just took out bone and everything, nerves. And then on this other arm, it went through, took out the bone. So I had to have a bone graft, and it's broken.
So we understand. So you, and we talked about this a little bit, this was in the morning when this happened? And you and one other guy are standing next to each other?
Well, we're walking down to the Jeep with Mormite can in each hand.
Uh-huh.
That's what they brought the food in. They kept the food hot.
Right.
And it knocked me down.
Where did it hit in relation to where the two of you were?
It must have hit just in between us. We were not close together because you didn't dare do that. But as I went down, I lost my helmet down into a ditch. And I said to a couple of guys that were there, not ours, I didn't know them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, would you get my helmet for me? I lost it off in the ditch. And I was bleeding, of course, down the sleeves. And they said, you don't need a helmet. You need to get back to the aid station. They hailed a Jeep and got me back to the aid station.
What do you think would have happened to you if they didn't?
No telling. I'd have bled to death, probably.
So it lands between you, knocks you off your feet, onto your stomach?
Yeah.
What did that feel like?
Well, it happens fast, you don't know.
You're kind of stunned and dazed?
It's just stunned.
Uh-huh. So it broke bones in your left hand, and that's bleeding.
And there was a little route across there, just a half inch deep.
So it took off the top of your hand.
When they went to do surgery, they scraped me all over, shaved me all over.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to hook up my hand to skin down here. When I woke up, a hand was like this and no skin. They had decided that they could press it back like that and sew it.
They bent your hand up,
yeah,
the wrist joint, and then stretched the skin to cover.
Yeah. My left arm was in a cast for 6 months.
And how about your right? Because it sounds like your right was pretty well.
For a year.
Was it shattered? Were all those bones shattered?
Yeah.
So you can't use either hand, either arm.
Not good. I'm down to 100% now, disabled.
And you had shrapnel in your backside, too.
Yeah, and it was just in the cheek. Didn't get to the bone, because I had the two overcoats on.
Yeah.
Time it got through them.
Were you in pain?
Yes. A funny thing, I got back to this aid station. They have what they call gray ladies. They're like our Red Cross.
Right.
And one of the gray ladies, they were older people, came and wrote a letter home for me. And the letter got home before the telegram got there.
And she has to write it for you because you can't write.
That's right.
You can't use your hands. So what did she write? You dictated for her?
Yeah, I told her what to say.
And this was to your wife or to your father?
To my wife.
What'd you tell her?
I told her, I said, I got hit, but I'll probably be back up on the front lines in a few days.
Likely story. What exactly would you be doing on the front lines?
I don't know.
Holding a spear in your mouth or something?
I'm trying to keep it from her.
You're trying to reassure her so she doesn't worry. What did you really think?
I didn't think I'd ever be able to use my hands much.
Yeah.
You know what I ended up doing?
Hmm.
Teaching typing.
Isn't that funny?
For 32 years.
Uh-huh.
Now I can't write again. I can't. See, this hand, this finger here has always been down like that.
Your index finger on your left hand.
Yeah, they never. But
it droops down.
I can type.
How many words a minute?
Well, I took a test at Fresno State when I went to summer school there. And I got 80-some words a minute.
Whew.
That wasn't accuracy, but it was words.
We'll forgive a few typos at that speed. So you're wounded. They get you to an aid station. They stop the bleeding. They save your life.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time where you weren't sure you were going to live? Where you thought those injuries might take your life?
No, I didn't think so. I never thought like that.
And what about the guy next to you? What happened to him?
I don't know.
Never found out? So you mentioned having the gray lady write the letter for you.
Yeah.
That it got home before the telegram did. Did the telegram match your story?
Well, no.
I didn't think so.
But the funny part is the mailmen and mail people were, especially out in the country, were very caring people. That telegram came, and he come to where my wife was, and he said, where's your mother? Well, she's over at Grandma's. Well, he said, I've got to see her. You want to come with me and go over there? So he took her over to Grandma's, and then he gave her the telegram.
So she'd have someone.
Because he didn't know the letter hadn't been there.
Right. He thought this is breaking the news.
Yeah.
And she needs someone to give her a hug and console.
Yeah.
What did the telegram say? Just that you were wounded?
I didn't read it because I had a whole bunch of letters. They caught up with me after I got home.
So I'm just guessing, but you probably bounced around from a few different hospitals during all that time?
Well, we went, the first hospital was in France, Paris. And next, we went to England, and it was in the south part of England. I don't know the town, because I couldn't get out, and things like that weren't very important to me.
Yeah, and I'm just imagining there had to be a lot of uncertainty for you. I mean, what's life going to be like when you've got casts on both your arms?
At that time, somebody had to feed me. They brushed my teeth. They took care of the other details.
Yeah.
Everything. And that's not fun.
Probably changes your perspective quite a bit.
Yes. Well, I'm almost that way now. Outside of my head, everything else quit working. But so far, my brain's been in pretty good shape.
When you're in a situation like that, and you're only 20 years old, what gives you hope? What keeps you going to the next day? What makes you think that when you get home, your wife's going to want to still be with you?
Well, I just knew she was.
Yeah. I imagine every day was different. There were probably good days and bad days in the recovery. Did you have to learn how to move around again and how to control your body again?
Yeah. I couldn't walk.
Mm-hmm.
Even.
For how long?
Till I got back to the States. We were in New York for a short time. Then we went to Texas to a VA hospital. I had a half cast on this and a whole one on that. Everybody else was going home on leave, you know.
Uh-huh.
I said, when can I go? I said, when you learn to eat.
You had to be able to feed yourself.
Feed yourself. Mm-hmm. I said, well, if you take that cast off and put a sleeve on there and wrap it where I can handle that fingers, I can feed myself. And I did. Within a week, I was myself.
They took the half cast off your left hand, but they left the whole cast on your
right. Oh, yeah, it stayed on there right up to the time I was discharged.
And I'm guessing you weren't left-handed, right, until then?
Then I was.
Yeah. And I don't know how much they told you or how much you remember about what they had to do to give your arms a chance of working again. There must have been quite a few different procedures they had to do.
Well, in the first place, you see that hole in my arm?
Uh-huh.
They wrapped that with dry bandage and then put a cast on it for 30 days. And when they took the cast off, that all that gauze was grown into the wound.
Uh-huh.
And it took quite a while soaking in the bathroom tub to get it off. And it still left the big... When I got discharged, they said, now, if you'd like to get that repaired, we can send you somewhere and get it repaired. I said, I like it just the way it is.
You had to be pretty thankful to be alive. And how long was it before you regained some function and where you could use both of your arms to some extent?
I got home, went to work in Dad's store, and every day I got asthma. And after 5 days, I talked to my buddy. I said, let's go to California. Oh, he said, I can't. I've got a job. Then when I went down to see him a couple of days later, he said, you still want to go to California? I said, yeah. Well, see, he was working for the railroad.
Uh-huh.
And a veteran came home and took his job back. So we came to California in one car, two pregnant women.
Been here ever since?
Yeah. My first job was digging stump holes for olive trees with a pick and shovel.
And with hands and arms that have been surgically repaired but would never again be at full strength. When we come back, we'll hear about how George Poplin overcame some of those challenges, how he followed up on that bargain he made with God on Christmas Eve of 1944, and we're even going to hear from one of his sons when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.